Good morning, Connecticut, and to our friends across the Sound. It's John Vocat, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Thanks for tuning into our award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you even more information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Well, what's the difference between a pediatric dentist and one we might visit as an adult? That's going to be one of many questions we'll get answered in our opening segment, along with inviting any child who may need dental care to a free pediatric dental clinic coming up February 26th in Norwalk. Then we'll check in with Connecticut BBB to hear about the latest scams affecting folks across the state, as well as hearing about how one company that promised to protect your identity and secure your vital information just got hit with a $100 million fine for failing to deliver. Then we'll choose love. We'll welcome Scarlett Lewis, another in a number of Sandy Hook parents we've been privileged to speak with, who tragically lost her son Jesse on 12/14 in the Sandy Hook shooting. Today marks the beginning of Social Emotional Learning Awareness Week in Connecticut, and we'll chat about the Jesse Lewis Choose Love movement and a very special event coming up February 12th at Quinnipiac University. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vocat, right after this news. There's always something wild going on at Connecticut's Beardsley Zoo, and the folks at the zoo want to remind anyone interested in applying that February 14th marks the summer internship application deadline. Internships are available for college-level students and recent graduates in animal care, education, horticulture, and veterinary care. If you'd like more information, call 203-394-6574 or visit beardsleyzoo.org for this and many other seasonal activities at Connecticut's only zoo. Well, normally we go out to the dentist, but today we brought the dentist here to you, to everybody in Connecticut who's listening, because there's some exciting stuff going on. I'm so pleased to welcome into the studio Greg Mogatoff. He is a pediatric dentist with Kids First Pediatric Dentistry and First Impressions Orthodontics. They've got three offices, but we're here specifically to steer you toward Norwalk on February 26th, beginning at 8 a.m. We'll be lining up folks for a free pediatric dental day. That's happening at 493 Westport Avenue. This is a free dental day for children only, and it's all part of the practice's mission of giving back to the community. So let's talk a little bit about that to get started, Doc. Is this a first of its kind initiative for you, this free dental day?
It is. As you said, our practice has three locations, one in Fairfield, another in Norwalk, and a third in Monroe. Our Norwalk office is our newest office, and we're very excited to be part of the community. We also recognize that there are many children out there who have unmet dental needs and feel it's extremely important to always give back to the community, and that's what we're trying to do on that day.
We want to talk about setting the right foundation for lifelong dental health, and I guess that's all about teaching children as young as possible about oral hygiene. How young can you actually start getting that knowledge out to kids and having them practice it, essentially, as soon as they can stand up and hold a toothbrush?
Absolutely. At our practice, we have a community educator, we call her. Mm-hmm. She actually dresses up the tooth fairy, and she goes to daycares, preschools, elementary school to teach children the importance of taking care of their teeth. In general, the children love the program, and we have lots of free handouts and goodies for them.
Mm-hmm. So for the benefit of parents that might be listening, either who are expecting or who have young children, how early should they be engaging with a dental professional, pediatric dentist like yourself?
The American Academy of Pediatric Dentistry and the American Academy of Pediatric Medicine recommend that every child have a first dental visit at age one. In our practice, we feel it's so important that children come in early that we actually don't charge for initial visit for children who are under the age of two.
Fantastic. So aside from, I would imagine, smaller outfitting chairs and age and size appropriate equipment, what are some of the differences between the type of dental exams and dental work you'll do on a child as young as 1 year old versus a full-grown adult?
Certainly. The difference between a pediatric dentist and an adult dentist could be night and day. At our practice, Kids First, we are pediatric dental specialists. We only treat children and adolescents. A dentist needs to go through 10 years of education to call themselves a pediatric dentist. We're a group that loves to treat children, and we want children to receive the highest quality care possible. We're not like the dentist of yesterday. We have video games, playhouses, televisions mounted in the ceilings above the dental chairs. We want every child to have the best experience possible.
Mm. How about in terms of overcoming that fear that a child has, whether it's a dentist office or a doctor's office or some other place that they have to go to get poked and prodded a little bit, especially for the first time?
Well, we hope we're not poking and prodding too much, but one of the keys is an early start. If you talk to most adults who are afraid of the dentist, unfortunately, it dates back to childhood, a negative childhood experience. So what we feel is if you start a child very young, offer a positive experience for them from the beginning, that they'll be a lifelong consumer of dentistry and have a long, so hopefully, love of dentistry.
And there are some unique concerns, I would imagine, for parents of children with special needs who may even have a much more amplified fear or have behavioral concerns. How do you guys cope with that?
We treat many patients who have special needs, both special needs children and special needs adult. What we offer often is desensitizing activities. We also work very closely with occupational therapists and physical therapists. We believe in a team approach. We offer social stories, we offer activity schedules, and we often do role-playing, etc.
So for folks like me that used to put the tooth under the pillow and get a quarter or a dollar or something, remind us about the entire process of transition between baby teeth and adult teeth. Why are they different, and why is the development of teeth from the less rooted, I guess, teeth that children have to the permanent teeth of adults?
Baby teeth in general serve many functions, and they're certainly very important. A child's teeth are necessary for him to eat and speak properly. They also hold space for the permanent teeth to come in correctly also. Some baby teeth you'll keep in your mouth for 10 years plus. Therefore, it's very important to take care of them.
So let's switch gears then for these active young children who might occasionally have a tooth removed either purposefully or by accident before it's intended to fall out itself. Tell us a little bit about what happens if a parent was to encounter a child who may have knocked one of their baby teeth out.
Unfortunately, if you knock a baby tooth out, there's not so much you can do about it. If you knock an adult tooth out, that's actually, a true dental emergency. Mm. So if the child does have trauma to their teeth and it does involve what's technically called an avulsion, or that they've lost their tooth, generally what's recommended is that the tooth's implanted as soon as possible. The sooner the tooth is reimplanted, the better prognosis will be. Mm. If for some reason you can't reimplant the tooth yourself, it's actually recommended that the tooth be put in milk, and you should go and see a pediatric dentist as soon as possible.
Okay. Let's talk fluoride then. I'm from that generation where they were putting fluoride in the water along with in the toothpaste. Tell us a little bit about fluoride and any concerns or issues that parents might have at this point, and when fluoride should be introduced into the mix of dental care for a child.
If you live in an area that has community water, then you actually have fluoride in your water in the state of Connecticut. If you live in an area with a well, you may or may not have fluoride in your water based on the content of fluoride actually in the well. So generally what we recommend is testing the well to see what the fluoride content is. As far as fluoridated toothpaste, the American Academy of Pediatric Dentistry recommends that an infant use a smear or really small size amount of fluoridated toothpaste every time they brush their teeth, which should ideally be twice a day.
Excellent. How about for X-rays? Do they play as important a role in the pediatric dental formula as they do when you're presenting X-rays for adults?
We certainly take X-rays in our office as necessary. In general, dental radiographs are extremely safe and administer a very low dose of radiation. At Kids First, we actually use digital X-rays, which in turn reduces radiation by about 70%. And we only take X-rays that are 100% necessary, so we try to avoid them if we can.
Okay. And how about just general toothaches? Is a toothache in a child different than a toothache in an adult, because it could potentially involve much deeper implications?
Toothaches in general can come from many different sources. I mean, it could be as simple as your child's teething. But certainly if your child has any sort of dental discomfort that's long-lasting, you should absolutely consult a pediatric dentist.
Excellent. And how often should a child see a pediatric dentist?
Every person, regardless of whether they're a child or adult, should be going to the dentist once every 6 months or two times a year for regular examinations, cleanings, and fluoride treatments.
And that's in your practice, you're advising starting at around age one.
Correct. So everyone should go to the dentist every 6 months starting at age one.
Excellent. And are the types of cleanings that are done on baby teeth, so to speak, on children's teeth, any different than what is done for adults?
It's highly dependent. Certainly, if you have a child who's got a good diet and good oral hygiene, a cleaning is extremely non-invasive. If you have a child who builds up more debris on their teeth, then obviously it's more like an adult cleaning. Mm. It also changes with age as the children get older. Certainly, their dental needs obviously increase as far as cleanings, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. I was interested in talking a little bit about the prevention factor. Tell us about some of the more frequent things that you're able to see and address and mitigate in young children that could eventually turn into significant adult problems.
Certainly what we want to do is promote prevention as much as possible. So in our practice, we go over things like the importance of oral hygiene, brushing and flossing, regular use of fluoridated toothpaste or fluoride rinses. What we try to do is focus on prevention. That way, hopefully, we can have a life that is cavity-free.
Mm-hmm. Are there particular things that you can pick up quite young in a patient that, if left untreated, could have lifelong implications?
Sure. I mean, unfortunately, children get cavities at a younger and younger age. Statistically, cavities are on the decline in most of the population, except for children. They're actually greatly on the rise in children. Most people don't necessarily know what that's caused by, but the general consensus is that it's associated with just a high carbohydrate or highly refined carbohydrate diet.
Excellent. So how do folks find a pediatric dentist?
Well, if you're in the listening community of this radio station, you're welcome to come see us. Kids First Pediatric Dentistry and First Impressions Orthodontics. We have offices in Fairfield, Norwalk, and Monroe. If you're not in the listening community, you can always go to the American Academy of Pediatric Dentistry website, which is aapd.org.
And once again, we'll wrap up where we started, and that is with this wonderful give back to the community and children, not just in Norwalk, I guess, but for anybody who can come down and get service within the time frame you're presenting. Tell us about, once again, the free dental day you're planning.
Free Dental Day, Kids First Pediatric Dentistry in Norwalk, February 26th, 8 a.m. We encourage you to come early. We expect it'll be rather busy, but we're really excited to be part of the community. We're really excited to give back.
Do you have some idea of how many folks you might be able to serve that day?
We're going to have at least 4 pediatric dentists on staff, ready to go, trying to help the community.
Fantastic. We want to thank you for coming in and talking to us a little bit this morning. From Kids First Pediatric Dentistry and First Impressions Orthodontics, Dr. Greg Mokotoff is with us this morning, not only giving us a quick crash course on pediatric dentistry, but also to remind us of this fantastic give back to the community, the free dental day for children only at 493 Westport Avenue in Norwalk on February 26th. Doctor, great to meet you, and thanks for doing what you're doing.
Thank you very much.
Well, one of our longest and dearest friends and one of the more familiar voices you'll hear on the award-winning For the People is our consumer liaison. Yes, Howard Schwartz is with us on the line today from the Better Business Bureau here in Connecticut. He's Executive Communications Director for Better Business Bureau serving Connecticut. You can hear him on our program every couple of months. You see him on TV. Even you call BBB. You hear him on the on-call music. Howard Schwartz is everywhere, but it's appropriate because he's going to save your money. He's going to help you save your privacy, your financial security, and he's going to give you lots of great advice to keep you from getting scammed by unscrupulous folks out there who are increasingly using every tool in the deck and every tool in the computer to try to get your money or beat you out of something. So we're so happy to welcome Howard back. Happy New Year, Mr. Schwartz.
Thank you so much, John, and a belated Happy New Year to you and your listeners.
So the first thing we want to talk about is this big blast of press releases and information we've seen in the past few days. BBB and Eversource, our friends at the utility, are cooperating because apparently they've got a scam going on that they just can't shake.
That's correct. And this has to do, it's a utility scam, obviously, and people are calling up, sometimes knocking on doors, posing as Eversource employees, and they'll tell you that you've missed a payment or that you were late, and that if you don't hand over the money right away, they will shut off your electricity. And we saw this in the past 2 years or so. So we are joining Eversource to let consumers know about this. It's not new. But the thing is, it works because consumers and businesses are frightened into letting their guard down. And it's particularly egregious when you're talking about the elderly, because the scammer's using fear, and often they have few resources to help them discern the legitimate from criminal activity. So it's one thing to have someone threaten to cut off your electricity during the summer. During the winter, it's quite a different situation. And we've seen a couple of towns here in the state of Connecticut where people are receiving these types of phone calls from people posing as Eversource employees. And by the way, the con artists who do these things are using very, very well-established sales techniques. They're relentless, and they're very good at what they do. The good news is that these types of cons are easy to spot and to avoid. So it's part of this pattern of fraud, John, that's called imposter scams, and we'll be talking more about that shortly. But I think the most important thing to remember, and we've said it a few times, but it bears repeating, is that the Internal Revenue Service, the electricity company, Eversource, credit card companies, collection companies, and bailiffs will never call you at home or threaten you with arrest or demand immediate payment over the telephone. In fact, Eversource, if you're behind on payments, will notify you by mail. And in fact, we are protected against having our electricity cut off during very, very cold periods of weather. If you owe the money, you will still have to pay, and it doesn't mean you should not pay because of that, but again, to protect people from terribly cold temperatures. So there's another utility scam we'd like to bring up before the tips, and we got this from the AARP, and it's showing up with increasing frequency. And what's happening is telemarketers are calling, and they'll say that you can qualify for a 15 or 20% discount. But first, however, you've got to give them your account number of your current utility provider. Mm-hmm. Of course, that's all they need. And what they do is they'll switch you over to their own services, and unfortunately, there is no discount. So, to avoid all these things, let's remember, telephone, not a place to do business. Don't be frightened into reacting, and that's probably the most important thing. You should stop and remember that even if someone seems legitimate, ignore the threatening of phone calls. But also understand how the shutoff process works, and if you have any questions about that, you can contact Eversource. The payment method is a key. Eversource representatives and no legitimate company will ever demand instant payment over the telephone, and they will certainly accept credit cards when the time comes or checks. And verify with your supplier. You can check, indeed, whether you are speaking with an Eversource representative by asking they authenticate who they are, ask for basic information about your account, the name on the account, and the address. And if they can't provide that, that means they're doing a more or less a shotgun approach and just dialing numbers until they get someone who is receptive.
On the other hand, you have discussed on our program numerous times, going back many years, as technology and identity-related information becomes a little bit more prolific in the internet, in the World Wide Web, a lot of times these people are armed with a couple of key pieces of information, which they weave like velvet into their wrap. And it sounds so natural, and it may strike someone in the immediate moment as, oh, these guys are legitimate. They knew this or that about me. But in fact, a lot of times, sadly, that information is out there and exploited by these scammers.
No, and that's a really good point. I'm glad you brought that up, because in some cases, the criminals will maybe recite the last four numbers of your social security number. They could obtain these things a number of ways on the internet. But just because they have those last four numbers does not mean they are who they say they are, and should not be sufficient reason to frighten you into paying. Don't let anyone threaten you on the telephone with arrest or having a bailiff come to you or whatever. And as you say, just because they have a bit of personal information does not mean it's legitimate.
Go ahead.
Yeah, you can take a telephone number, put it into the internet, and find out someone's address. So
sure.
That's an example of how little information is needed.
So whoever's listening, I guess these days, sad to say, just, and I think you said it best, don't do any kind of business over the phone. If anybody's threatening to shut off a life force thing like electric or gas utilities in the middle of the winter, there's also going to be some collateral information in the mailbox, and that's the best way. Is don't call us. You send something in the mail, and then we'll deal with it. So that's great information. Howard Schwartz is with us. He's from BBB Serving Connecticut. He joins us every couple of months to update us on the latest scams and issues that are impacting you here in Connecticut as consumers. The next is that, yes, sadly, it is approaching February, and that means most people have gotten all their tax documents in the mail, and they're being barraged on television with all types of incentives to get your taxes done. So I guess all the way through mid-April, folks are going to be thinking about taxes. And of course, this is a season that is ripe for fraud related to income tax. So Howard, what's the angle on the scammers trying to apply folks for some of the money through income tax fraud?
Well, for folks who don't know what income tax fraud is, the typical scenario is that a criminal will file a fake return under someone else's name and ask the refund be diverted to their own accounts. And this is identity theft. Essentially, income tax fraud of this sort is identity theft. And they may have gathered that information from any of the data breaches. No one really knows where. And some of them will actually sit on top of your personal information waiting for tax time. You only find out after you send your return to the Internal Revenue Service, and they tell you, sorry, we already got your return. It's been filed, processed, and the refund check has already gone out. So in a sense, really, the clock is ticking. How quickly the criminals are hoping to file a return in a consumer's name or a taxpayer's name before they do. And as far as the prevalence, it's a huge problem in the billions of dollars, and it's growing every year. And the Internal Revenue Service admits stopping it is an ongoing battle, but a top priority. And they've assigned thousands of people to help consumers who call up and saying, listen, I've got this problem. And the IRS and the Federal Bureau of Investigation are well aware of this. Actually, this is almost an industry cranking out these fake tax returns. There are people who will do dozens a day from virtually from their living room. Mm. And the IRS is changing some of its procedures and policies. For example, there were people who are getting dozens of refund checks to the same address. Mm. Well, that's now a red flag, as it rightly should be. And they don't need a lot of information to do this. And some of the consequences, by the way, are they may they'll buy a fake W-2 form or a real one, fill it in themselves. And the consequences can include the IRS coming back to you and saying, you didn't pay income taxes on this other job, your related job. So that's another problem. So if you become a victim, since your Social Security number likely has been compromised, the IRS will issue a special six-digit identification number to authenticate yourself. And I think this sort of underscores the importance of systems changing nationwide in terms of who gets our social and in terms of what authentication methods we use. And by the way, IRS scams go on year-round. You're right, it reaches a fever pitch at this time of year, but the one that we see year-round, again, telephone imposter. Mm. Somebody calls up, they say you owe money to the IRS, pay up right away, mm-hmm. or you'll get arrested.
Well.
So file if you can now, the sooner the better. You may not have all your paperwork, it's not always practical. Better Business Bureau recommends you file electronically. And if you do, you can get a refund in less than a month, maybe a week or two, and request your refund be deposited directly into your account. Another way to protect yourself is to use ID theft prevention measures, the usual thing. Don't carry your Social Security card with you. Don't give it out just because a business or professional like a dentist or doctor asks for it. And this is very important. Don't carry your Medicare card on you unless you're going to the doctor. Because, as we know, it has your Social Security number. Now, if something should happen, you will still be treated in the emergency ward, and they'll give you billing, require billing information after.
Mm.
Check your credit reports, totally free, from the government-sanctioned annual credit report. That's one word, annualcreditreport.com. And they will ask you for your date of birth and Social Security number to authenticate who you are. Finally, the Internal Revenue Service will never call you, as other government agencies won't either. And by the way, you can go to annualcreditreport.com, but if I may, I've got a phone number for them as well, and that's 877-322-8228, and you can get your credit reports from all three reporting bureaus to see whether or not there's any suspicious activity in your name.
Very good. Howard Schwartz with us in the first half of our show segment with him this morning, and Howard is giving a lot of information. If you missed it and you're listening on the air, you can always go to any of our radio station websites and check out our For the People podcast. It's also available on iTunes, and listen through to replay all the important information that Howard or any of our guests are presenting at any point on any of our programs. Howard Schwartz is Executive Communications Director for Better Business Bureau serving Connecticut. We're going to take a short break. We've got about 7 or 8 more minutes with Howard and a couple more important things to talk about. We'll be right back. Stick with us and come on back. Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots causes that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through Love CT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the event guide tab, and click on to Love CT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. February is Heart Month, when we remind ourselves about the importance of taking care of our hearts and health. Now that many attempts at keeping New Year's resolutions about diet and exercise have fallen a little short, it's time to face the facts about risks and consequences. Get Healthy CT, the Regional Wellness Coalition of Hospitals, Health Departments, and other health and social service providers, urges Connecticut residents to take a higher level of accountability for your own health and know your numbers for heart and diabetes. You can learn more, get recipes, and all the information about staying healthy in Connecticut at GetHealthyCT.org. We're back, and so is Howard Schwartz. He's with us every couple of months. He's Executive Communications Director for Better Business Bureau, serving Connecticut for many, many years. A wise man with a lot of experience in ways of protecting you, your family, your children, and your friends and coworkers from the many scams and scrupulous folks that are out there to beat you and get your money, steal your identity, and worse. I guess one of the sad things that we have to talk about is identity theft, but made even sadder when a company that advertises itself as one that will help protect protect people's identity and privacy has an issue. So we're going to spend the next couple of minutes talking about a major fine which just came down from the Federal Trade Commission. Howard, tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, the company is LifeLock, and they have to pay $100 million for consumer restitution. Let's preface this by saying no company can prevent identity theft, but companies like LifeLock and similar ones can issue warnings or alerts if there's some sort of suspicious activity, and they can help you really clean up the mess afterwards. That being said, the common question that how much can they do? What are they doing with their personal information, and are they taking care of it? Well, LifeLock was told in 2010 by the Federal Trade Commission to get its act in order for a bunch of reasons, not the least of which is security. And what the FTC chairman has said is while LifeLock promised consumers complete protection against all types of identity theft, the protection it, meaning LifeLock, actually provided left enough holes that you could drive a truck through it. So specifically what the FTC said was the company falsely advertised that its ability to prevent ID theft, and this is the important part, failed to establish and maintain a comprehensive information security program to protect user-sensitive information. And if we've learned anything from the past few years, it's that virtually any server can get hacked. So in a sense, this would be terrible. You're going to them for protection, and there aren't sufficient protections in place. Now, the $100 million fine was born of the fact that the company did not obey a 2010 order to clean up. So this is a contempt of court citation in a way. And just briefly, the issues involved was that it failed to establish and maintain the comprehensive information security problem, that it oversold itself by protecting sensitive data, and it said that it had financial institution quality security measures in place. And according to the Federal Trade Commission, that just did not happen.
Very good. We've got about 3 minutes left with Howard Schwartz of BBB serving Connecticut. So I guess the last thing that we're going to want to talk about is the business of trying to stay healthy. We're talking about fitness facilities. A lot of folks made resolutions around the first of the year. For people like me, I wait till Super Bowl is over till I start following my resolutions to try to eat better and get more exercise. And of course, warm weather's coming. Spring break is coming. A lot of people are looking to fitness facilities now to get in shape for either their winter vacations or the upcoming summer. Howard, what are a couple of the most important things in the last few minutes that we have to tell us about fitness facilities?
The majority of fitness facilities are legitimate, they're trustworthy, there are no problems with them. But that being said, the number of complaints about fitness centers and health clubs in Connecticut declined over the year, but increased across the country in 2015. And just to give you a rough idea, nationwide, the complaints about fitness centers grew to 7,400 in 2015. A large number of the complaints, John, that we see involve contract issues and billing, as well as disputes about cancellation procedures. Consumers will have difficulty canceling repeated unauthorized charges. So rule number one, don't sign on the dotted line until you take the paperwork home, carefully read it, understand if there are fees for cancellation or for special classes and that sort of thing. Maintain control over your payments. Are you sure that you want to pay for a year in advance? Maybe you don't. Maybe you don't want to have monthly withdrawals from your debit card or credit card automatically. So you can set it up that you pay them when you want using a credit card. Finally, in Know Your Rights, in Connecticut, according to the Department of Consumer Protection, no health club contract may contain an automatic renewal clause unless it's for a period of not to exceed a month and only after you've made a first payment. And take the facilities for a test drive. See if you like them, if they're too busy at the time when you work out. And ask lots of questions. What are the terms of an introductory period? What will it cost when it's over? And what should happen if the gym goes out of business? All we say at the end is make sure all verbal promises are in the contract, and most important, check with your physician to make sure that you're okay to work out and that your program is safe.
Very good. Lots of great and important information this morning, as always, when we visit with Howard Schwartz, Executive Director of Communications with BBB serving Connecticut. We will be talking to him again around this time in March. Yes, we'll be back with Howard for some more information as we head into springtime, because scammers know no clock. They know no holidays. They're always out to beat you, take your money, steal your identity, and Howard Schwartz is one of our long and best resources in telling you how to protect yourselves, your family, and your loved ones. Howard, thank you so much once again for being part of the program, and we will talk to you in about 2 months. Thanks. Well, I've been so honored on this program to be able to welcome a number of parents who tragically lost their children on 12/14 in the Sandy Hook incident. And Scarlett Lewis is the latest to grace our airwaves. She will be in Connecticut for the beginning of Social Emotional Learning Awareness Week, which starts today as we broadcast this show on Sunday. And we want to talk with her a little bit about the Jesse Lewis Choose Love movement and an exciting event that's coming up later this week at Quinnipiac University with another one of our good friends, Senator Blumenthal. But first, let's talk about where Scarlett Lewis is today. Scarlett, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
So as we call you today on our Thursday before the actual air broadcast, you're in Arkansas. What brings you down there today?
I am in Arkansas, and I've been traveling around meeting with superintendents and counselors and principals and teachers down here about the Choose Love Enrichment Program that my foundation has developed, that we have had local teachers on a team write a social emotional learning and character value curriculum. And our plan is to disseminate this for free on our website. After Jesse died, my son, Jesse, who was 6 years old, obviously, he left a message on our kitchen chalkboard. He wrote three words: nurturing, healing, and love. I found that after the incident, and he had written that sometime shortly before. Those three words, I knew right away, aren't in the vernacular of a six-year-old. They were phonetically spelled because he was in first grade and just learning to write. But we found that the meaning of those three words are in the definition of compassion across all cultures. And when we broke down, because we knew that this was probably a spiritual awareness, that he didn't have much longer to be here, and I took it as a message of comfort for his family and friends, but I also knew that there was something more to that. And when you break down the meaning of each of those words, nurturing means loving kindness and gratitude. Healing literally means forgiveness, and love is compassion in action. When you practice those three character values in that order, you are choosing love. Mm-hmm. And I thought about how important social emotional learning is for children, and just felt like had the shooter in our case had access to nurturing, healing, love, been able to give and receive it, that the whole tragedy wouldn't have happened. So I developed this program because I believe that every child is entitled to what I consider this life-saving curriculum. And so I'm thrilled. I'm getting such great reception down here. I was born in Arkansas, so it's really like coming home for me, but everyone's real excited about it down here, and we're going to be celebrating it in Connecticut next week.
Tell me a little bit about as you began rolling out this program. program in its early stages. Has it changed much aside from you being, a little bit more comfortable and practiced in presenting the concepts?
With all the research that we've done, and we have a neuroscience piece that was written by Dr. Chris Cook at Western Connecticut State University. So all understanding why we respond the way that we do, understanding that we have a choice, even though we can't always choose what happens to us, we can always choose how we respond, understanding how our brains are wired, and just emotional intelligence and all these different aspects of and that are included in the Choose Love equation, that I'm calling it, this formula for choosing love, which is based on Jesse's message, which is courage. We include courage, first of all, based on Jesse's courage that he showed in the classroom when he was instrumental in saving 9 of his classmates before he died. But that courage is not really what we think of in our society sometimes with the images that were shown in the media. Sometimes I think we tend to think of courage as, the big tough guy. But in reality, courage, it takes courage to be grateful when things aren't going our way and when we choose to find something to be grateful for. It takes courage to forgive someone who's hurt us, especially when they're not sorry. And it also takes courage to step outside of our own pain and help another person through theirs. And so courage is such an important aspect. And it's absolutely amazing that through neuroscience we show how all these character values work together. Gratitude, so important. And there's so much research that's come out, especially within the last 5 years, of how being grateful is so beneficial for us, really mentally, physically, and emotionally. And then forgiveness. A lot of what's in this program are things that I've learned, and they're not taught. So, for instance, forgiveness. I think about what I knew about that when Jesse was murdered. And, I'm 40-something when he was when his life was taken. And I go to church, and I graduated from college, and I'd been out in the workforce. I mean, my point is none of that matters because I did not know what forgiveness was, and I found out really in order to survive without being consumed by anger and resentment that the courageous act of forgiveness, I should say, is really cutting the cord to pain and retaining your own personal power. It's making a choice to forgive, and then it becomes a process. It doesn't mean forgetting. It doesn't mean condoning what the other person does. It doesn't mean that they're not responsible for their actions, but it's really a gift that you give yourself so that you can move forward with less anger. And this is all backed by research. And then the interesting thing about how compassion is taught a lot in our classrooms, it's taught as empathy. And actually, there are two components to compassion. The first component is an empathetic component when you identify with someone's pain. But in reality, that's painful. Yeah. Let's face it. When you're identifying with someone who's in pain, this lights up the same receptors in your brain as physical pain. And if we teach compassion as empathy, we don't get beyond that painful part to the part that actually serves us as well. And that's when we actively do something to help ease that pain. That's the action component. That's why we call it compassion in action, because it's that action component that actually is where the line between the giver and the receiver is blurred. That's when all the benefit that we give out comes back to us and more. And so the lessons are taught in just a little different way. It's actually written by teachers for teachers. We've really taken our time to develop this, and we've included brain research in this as well so that kids can understand how their brain operates, when they respond in a certain situation, they understand why, what part of their brain they're responding from, and the kind of control that they can have if they pause to think about it and use their logic and reasoning part of their brain. And by the way, this has really profoundly impacted the educators that have been working on this. And myself, I find myself using this information in my life on a daily basis. And you know, this was really something I feel like this program, well, I'm a mom, mm-hmm. and I was a professional before Jesse died, not an educator. So I feel like all of this is not coming from me, but it's coming through me.
Yeah.
And so really, our mission and vision from day one has not changed at all. And that is, part of it is to start Choose Love movements all over the world where people can, I realized after the tragedy that, in my mind, the whole tragedy started with an angry thought in the shooter's head. Mm. And the amazing thing to me was that an angry thought can be changed. And we don't teach kids, and a lot of adults aren't aware, I wasn't aware, that we have 50 to 60,000 thoughts going through our head on a daily basis. Mm. And if you, there's science that shows that 80% of those thoughts do not serve us. 80% are angry, and they're either ruminations about the past or fear for the future. There are also thoughts that we've had yesterday, a week ago, and a year ago, and they don't serve us. Mm. So part of this program is making kids just aware of their thoughts and the fact that you are not your thoughts.
Right.
You have control over your thoughts, and you can put your thoughts to work for you. And when you think kind and loving thoughts, that it behooves you, it benefits you. And here are all of the benefits, because making kids aware of the benefits of choosing love will get them to want to repeat that action.
Okay, well, let's pick up on that thought. Folks, if you're just tuning in, getting ready for the rest of our programming day, we thank you for joining us here on the award-winning For the People. I am engaged with a very educational conversation with Scarlett Lewis, founder of the Jesse Lewis Choose Love Movement in honor of her son who was lost in the Sandy Hook tragedy. The Jesse Lewis Choose Love Movement is a nonprofit organization teaching others to choose love. We are going to be celebrating that starting today, February 7th through 14th in the state of Connecticut. It is Social and Emotional Learning Awareness Week. Scarlett Lewis and the Jesse Lewis Choose Love Movement and all her followers and devotees and folks hearing about this are going to be joining together in celebration over the course of the week. There's an exciting event coming up at Quinnipiac University. We'll tell you about that in a couple minutes. But Scarlett, as we continue our conversation, you said how much it impacted you and it impacts the educators who are involved. Can you talk a little bit about the difference between trying to impart for, I imagine, many of the children, this kind of new wrinkle in their way of thinking and behaving when you're talking about a pre-K or kindergarten age child versus kids who will be part of the eventual aspect of this program who are into the middle school or even the high school age? How do you get a child to start thinking in this highly beneficial and productive way?
Well, it's first introducing them to the actual concepts and what they mean and making them sure that they understand the benefits to themselves, what practicing gratitude actually does for them, what practicing forgiveness. And when you're talking about pre-K kids, it's really through the form of story. And the woman that wrote the pre-K and K portion of our program is a woman that travels really throughout the state of Connecticut teaching teachers how to give their kids social and emotional learning components, how to teach that. So she was an incredible woman, now a dear friend of mine, that developed that program. And And so we're really excited about that. And it looks a little bit different in pre-K through fifth grade as it does for the high school and for the middle school. In fact, our rollout is pre-K through fifth first, and it's going to be the high school in a couple of months. And the delay was this. Obviously, the teachers that teach in those grades were the ones that wrote the program, but we couldn't figure out in a high school day how to get it into the day. There's just not a lot of time, especially with all the testing that goes on. So we've come up with real creative ways to put it into the day. The programs can be taught basically within 6 weeks, or there's extension programs that can bring you all throughout the year, because we really want this. In the pilot programs that we have had in Connecticut, they've really found that the classroom climate has dramatically changed, and all of these vocabulary words, including choosing love, are things that the kids start saying on a regular basis and feeling and bringing home. And the teachers are getting little notes from their kids saying, I've had a great summer, but I'm still choosing love, and all of this, which is really nice.
Yeah. Well, I was so fortunate and blessed, really, in early in my high school years as an only child, to be exposed to educators and mentors who, kind of reinforced the concept that you have to learn how to be happy. But by the same token, we unfortunately also are exposed to so much that it's easy to learn to be unhappy. And so when you're talking about trying to extend these choose love movement concepts to younger children, it would seem to me that it would be somewhat less challenging task, or at least present a much greater opportunity for immediate success than it would with older children, who have so much more time in the game. All of that negative exposure that they tend to start having perhaps as young as middle school, and certainly into high school, all of the teen angst and everything that's going on with teenagers. If you could, in just a minute or two, tell us a little bit about how the program tweaks in order to accommodate all of the other stuff going on in the teenage brain and the teenage emotional life.
Well, you know what's really interesting, and we do have, the program is geared specifically for teenagers, but there's not a lot of change in the basic concepts of the program, pre-K through 12th grade. And I've got to tell you, anxiety starts, the average onset age for anxiety is 6 years old in our country. Okay. And so you're saying that it's easier when they're littler sometimes, but the interesting thing is, I mean, I've been into prisons and given, let's say, convicted felons, the formula for choosing love. Now, these are guys that are really non-rehabilitatable. These are guys that are gang members and drug users. And I have given them this formula for choosing love. Look, guys, all you've known is revenge and anger. Here is a formula for choosing love, and it's gratitude and forgiveness and compassion and action. I explain what it is, and I'll tell you what, at the end of that session, and I don't really say too much different to them than I do when I go around the world speaking, just presenting the formula, they choose love. They want to feel good. As you said, they want to be happy. Yeah. And that is the way to happiness. It is the path. And, you know, people say, well, it's so simple. How can it be so powerful? And I said, I think it's in the simplicity where the power is.
Yeah. And it makes it easier to grasp for certain. So the Jesse Lewis Choose Love Movement is encouraging all educators that might be listening to our program to take part in SEL Awareness Week by asking their students to create art projects based on the theme of choosing love. And so, Scarlett, quickly tell us how educators can get involved and get their students involved in this.
Yes, absolutely. We are asking if interested, that the educators have their kids do independent art projects. It could be anything with the theme of choosing love and what choosing love means to them, and be creative and fun, and then share those images on our Instagram. If they want to email the images to me, I'd love to share them on Facebook. I want to get the students' message of choosing love out to them. We have 7 schools that have been chosen to do murals, and these are huge murals. So the kids have been emailing me pictures along the way, and they're so excited. These are going to be showcased at Quinnipiac University on February 12th at 10 a.m. in their College of Education, and we're going to kick off the celebration with U.S. Senator Blumenthal, who I have been working with extensively over the past year on social and emotional learning legislation. And he's going to be talking about that, looking at the murals, and answering any questions that the community has about implementing this in their community. And there's 30 years of scientific research that show that kids that have been exposed to social emotional learning at an early age are happier and healthier as adults in so many different ways.
Excellent. Well, we thank you so much for taking all this time with us this morning, Scarlett Lewis, calling in from Arkansas, where she's working hard to communicate the Jesse Lewis Choose Love Movement Initiative to educators in that state, but coming back to Connecticut for Social and Emotional Learning Awareness Week, starting today, Sunday the 7th, going through the 14th. If you'd like more information about the great work that this organization is doing in honor of Jesse Lewis, one of the children lost at Sandy Hook School on 1214, you can visit their website at jesselewischooselove.org. Scarlett, best of luck to you. I can't wait to talk to you again to find out how this program is catching fire across the nation and around the world. Thanks for your time this morning. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host and don't necessarily represent the views of Connoisseur Media. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a community calendar item relevant to the audience and communities we serve, you must make your request for consideration in writing via email to me at john.voket, V as in Victor, O-K-E-T, at connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file, reflecting the full scope of our station's responsiveness to critical issues in the communities we serve, can be viewed upon request weekdays during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott, with original music by Noel Viette. This is John Voquette, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Join us again at this time next week for another installment of the award-winning For the People, or listen to this and other For the People podcasts under the podcast tab on our station's website or on iTunes. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.